Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani. All our reported podcasts and videocasts are saved for your later on-demand listening pleasure. Say that three times fast. Including, of course, our membership website, caregiverdave.com. And if you forget that, just Google Caregiver and Dave. That's all you need to find me, those two words. And our goal here is to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. And we have a very exciting show planned for you today with my lovely co-host, founder of the Caregiver Space, Adrian Gruberg. And today we will be interviewing author Lisa Santiago. I think I got some marbles in my mouth. Let me get them out. Okay. Who has been teaching psychology for over 10 years. And she has been a facilitator and speaker at the national conferences and worked in an adult psychiatric unit. Wow. Lisa was also the sole caregiver for her grandmother. That's her most important job in the last years of her life. So she's gone now. So you will not want to miss this show. I am your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every single kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring and selfless and sacrificial souls, but they have this tiny little problem. They're very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. And that's why 30% of them actually die before their loved ones do, and 60% become hospitalized needing a caregiver of their own. Isn't that sad? Now we can learn something from the airlines. They tell us in the event of an emergency, put your oxygen mask on first before you attempt to help your loved one with their mask. They know what they're talking about. But, I mean, my gosh, what an amazing metaphor for all of life. Take care of you first, not out of selfishness, but out of survival. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects it can have on us. Anytime we suffer a loss, we go through the grief process. It could take days or weeks or months or years or, gosh, you could never get over it. But we don't want that for you. So if you feel like you're ready to move on with your grief, we can help. Unfortunately, folks, there's only one way out of the grief process, and that's to go through it. So no shortcuts. Sorry about that. Can't go around it, under it, over it. Got to go through it. So hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss. Hey, I want to take this time and thank my last week's guest, Linda Fostek, her author of Get Off the Worry-Go-Round. And just a reminder, you can listen to that interview and all of our interviews right here on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com or davethecaregiver.com or caregiverdave.com. I've got so many domains and they all go to the same place. So just an update on me. I ought to start getting domains now where everything is misspelled. I think Google spells it right, maybe. So just an update on me, or I should say Charlene and I. We are in New York City and we've been here for a week and we just pitched 88 national producers of syndicated national TV, radio, and publications like People Magazine and stuff. And my guest was there with me. That's where I met her. And when I say we, I mean my wife was the biggest hit. She was responsible for helping me get double what I would have gotten if she wasn't there. They just honed in on her and started a conversation with her, not even knowing that she can't speak. But, you know, she's an effective communicator. Who needs words, right, honey? Yep. Then I spoke at NASDAQ and Charlene was there in the audience just encouraging me. And we actually both posed in front of the huge Jumbotron in front of NASDAQ. And both our pictures were on there. And it was on. We had 22 minutes of fame. And I gave a quick 22 seconds of fame. And I gave a quick 22-second talk while it was on for both of us with who were standing in front of the sign. And we just had so much fun all week. I didn't know New York can be so much fun and so tiring at the same time. But now we're relaxing. We took it easy today and visiting with relatives and friends in New York tomorrow and the rest of the week. But enough about me. A big LA welcome. I'm sorry, I'm in New York. A big Apple welcome to my guest, Lisa Santiago. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Thank you, Dave and Adrian. Great to be here.
So excited to have you on. Thank you for accepting at the last minute, literally. So why don't you take a
Oh.
minute or two, introduce yourself. I like to say and ask my guests, just who is Lisa Santiago and why was she put on this earth? Go ahead, it's yours.
Oh, well, I was put on this earth to really help people. That is every job I've ever had in my life involves helping people in some way. And it's progressed to, include teaching, helping people move forward in life with obtaining a higher education. And now, just being very honored to have been the person that got to care for my grandmother at the end of her life and use really, truly everything that I gained through my life experience and my education and every job I ever had to be able to take care of her and keep her healthy and keep myself healthy at the same time.
She sounds like a very unusually wonderful, unique person. Why don't you
Yes.
share a little bit about her? Let's start with that.
Oh, my grandmother was born in the United States, but her parents came from Czechoslovakia. They were immigrants from Czechoslovakia and they moved to Iowa. And my grandmother was feisty her whole entire life. And there's a theory in psychology that the core of your personality remains the same through your lifetime. And my grandmother is a good example of that theory in action because one of the things that she did as a feisty young teenager was to run away from home when she was 16 and get on a train because she wanted to go to California and be Rosie the Riveter. She got as far as Denver, Colorado before she was busted with her friend, a neighbor boy who had also run away with her. They had trusted an aunt of his in Denver to put them up for the night, and that aunt called the family and told them where they were. And police came to take her home, and she was terrified because my great grandfather was apparently quite a guy and, ruled with an iron fist. So she was terrified, and she told me the story many, many times of how she cried and told the police, "Please don't take me back." She even offered to be sent to a foster home or an Audi home, like I think they call them Audi homes, where she just was going to go anywhere. She didn't care, any kind of other home other than her own home. And the police said, no, we promise we will talk to your father. He will not hurt you. And so they did talk to my great grandpa, and she went home on the train with him. He did not touch her. And when she got home, she was punished. I think mostly locked in her room, but he didn't hit her or hurt her for that. So she was grateful, but she kept looking for a way out. And then she married the first boy who had a car who liked her and ran across the border to Indiana and got married.
Wow.
And so it followed through all the way to her senior years when she was living with me. When she first came to live with me, she could still drive. And when she would get fed up, just with whatever, she would just get in her car and drive. And that was okay until one day I came home and she wasn't home. And I knew that she couldn't drive at night. So I started to panic, where is my grandma? And I kept thinking, this is just like her, you know. If she doesn't like something, she's just going to leave. And so she got in her car, and I thought, where will she go? She will go to the casino. So luckily for technology now and those little cards that you put in the machine, I called the casino and said, please, you know, this is a crazy request, but I'm worried about my grandmother. She can't drive at night. And you check your machines to see when she used her card. And they checked, and they said, oh, yes, she was here at the slot machines.
So how old is she at this point?
At that time, she was 86.
My. Pretty fry, or spry, I should
say. Yep.
So how is it that they picked you to be her caregiver? How many siblings did you have and relatives that were candidates?
Well, my grandmother has five children, and a number of them graciously volunteered to take care of her. But unfortunately, they didn't last very long. I kept saying, you know, send her to me, you know, I'm trained and I know what's going on in her brain. And they said, no, you have so many jobs and you're teaching and we're retired. We can do this. And so they tried, and, you know, my poor grandma kind of bounced around among different homes. She even moved to California for a while to live with my mom. And then she bounced back to Iowa. She lived with some cousins for a while. And again, the core of her personality kicked in there. She ran away and hitchhiked. She hitchhiked from that home to Czech Village, her favorite place. And that was pretty scary. After that, they were like, that's it. We can't take her anymore. And everybody kind of gave up after about 3 or 4 months until she finally, happily, I was happy. She ended up with me. So that was good. Everybody tried, you know, I have to give them credit. It's a very hard job. Yeah.
You know, your book focuses on quick tips for caregivers. What's one of the most powerful tips that you can share with our audience, since you're the expert?
Yeah, one of the most powerful tips, I believe, and I call this among the most powerful tips because it's something that came to me as I listened to my mom and my aunts and everybody who had tried to take care of my grandmother, in how their version of care was taking care of her as if she couldn't do anything for herself. And thinking, you know, if I tell you what to wear, then you don't have to think about it. If I tell you what to eat, you don't have to think about it. If I tell you what to do, you can relax. And really, you know, in psychology, you understand that people are happiest when they have a perception of control. And one of the things that I was able to put in place very easily because of that understanding was to allow my grandmother to have control over as many things as possible in her life, and at least, you know, perceive a sense of control. So, you know, there's a chapter that I call, you know, give control to gain control. And a very simple example is in the morning when it was time to get dressed, I would put two outfits together and say, here, Grandma, you know, here's two different outfits. Which one would you like to wear today? And she could choose. Another one was with eating. You know, maybe there's other people who are caring for someone and they get to a point where they don't want any real food anymore. My grandma wanted ice cream all the time. Do we have ice cream or chocolate? And I would say, you know, well, yeah, but, you know, we have to eat real food first. And I would put the food on the plate and, you know, she would look at it and feel like she didn't have control. So I learned to at least give her a choice. If I could, you know, have a choice in vegetables, well, you can have corn or green beans. Which one do you want? And then I would make whatever she wanted. Then when it was time to actually eat, you know, she really didn't want to eat a lot, you know, and so I would, give her the same, I would put the same amount of food on these plates, and she always said, that's too much, that's too much, that's too much. So I started to put the same amount of food on two different plates, one on a dinner plate that was as large as possible, and the other amount of food, equal amount, on a salad plate. And I would show her both and say, okay, here's two plates of food. Which one do you think you can eat in order to have ice cream? You know, and then she would pick, you know, the one on the salad plate because it looked visually like a lot less. And she felt really good. She felt like, ooh, I'm getting the plate with less food. And she was really happy about that. So just choices, even, you know, days when she had to take a shower and wash her hair, never wanted to get wet. She would always ask me, you know, do I have to get wet? And I would say, yes, it's a shower. You have to get wet. And she would say, do I have to wash my hair? And then I would ask her. So I would kind of let her feel like she had a choice here. I would say, well, if you can remember the last time you washed your hair, you don't have to wash your hair. So when was the last time you washed your hair? And then, of course, she didn't remember. And I would say, well, I guess that makes the decision. You get to wash your hair today.
So she had dementia, right?
Yeah, she was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. You know, they're related. So it progressed. It progressed at the end pretty severely. Yeah, but giving her choices so that she could feel and really, you know, have some amount of control in these little things that they seem little to us, but when you've taken all that away from somebody who's been independent and, you know, yeah, bought their own home and drove their own car and, you know, was able to travel to other countries and survived, you know, the war, you know, world wars. It's just...
Yeah, they become like a child again, don't they?
Yeah. You know, so, and then they have those moments of clarity where they do remember, and then those clarity moments lead to sadness. So,
yeah.
I, you know, giving them as much of a sense of control for anything that they can do is mm-hmm. extremely helpful. And it made my grandmother so much happier. And then that made our whole home happier. You know, she could smile and feel good.
Well, you're a smart lady. What do you have, a master's and a PhD?
I have a master's and an educational specialist degree. So it's a PhD. I didn't do a dissertation.
So is that called a doctorate? I'm kind of unfamiliar with that. Anyway, you're a smart person is what I'm saying. All of the training you had, was there stuff that they didn't teach you that, you know, your training was lacking in for caregiving?
Oh, surprisingly, I was quite surprised that, yes, you know, I really did think I was fully prepared to handle anything that came my way. And
Silly girl.
Was surprised many, yes, I was so silly. And, you know,
we
that's
all are.
Why I have all of this to try and help people because, wow, I was blown away. Probably the worst surprise, there was lots of surprises, but
yeah,
the worst one that really floored me was a morning that I had a number of jobs. I was still working and teaching, you know, in the psych unit, and I thought I could keep doing all these things and care for my grandmother, so I was really stupid. I came
We've
downstairs
all been there.
One morning. Yeah, and this was when my grandmother really had quite a good amount of her faculties still about her. You know, she was
really
able to up and, you know, use the restroom, do all these things by herself, get snacks by herself. So, you know, it was right at the easiest time of this entire process. But I came downstairs in the morning and I smelled something really bad. And I thought, you know, I have three shepherds. And I thought, oh, no, the dogs had an accident and hopefully Grandma didn't step in it. So I calmed down. As I came further and further, it got worse and worse and worse. I turned the corner into the bathroom, and I have a giant bathroom, which was wonderful for my grandmother. Her walker fit in and out of the doors, and she could reach everything, and she wasn't cramped. So that was good for that, but it was bad this day because my grandmother was still in that mode where she thought that she could be faster without her walker. And she got up at whatever, I really honestly can't even tell you what time of the night or early morning she got up because she had to use the bathroom very badly. And so she thought she'd be faster without the walker, and she tried to run to the bathroom, and then of course she tripped and fell at the entrance of the doorway to the bathroom. And of course, because she had to go to the bathroom so badly, everything came out. And she tried her best to get herself up, which meant crawling, slithering like a giant anaconda through what seemed to me at least 20 pounds of feces. It was horrible, and urine, yeah. And it was everywhere. And, I have to give her credit for trying. Apparently, I became a CSI investigator as I looked at this crime scene because, I had to look at the evidence and figure out how did she get from here to here? What did she do? What did she touch? And, of course, in trying to get up, if you can imagine trying to crawl your way across a 15-foot bathroom floor and trying to stand up. So you would reach anything you could. You would grab the edge of the bathtub. You would grab I had a double sink, so lots of sink space to touch. And of course, your hands are on the ground first as you're slithering across, and they're touching everything that came out of your body.
That sounds like a blood scene, a crime scene. Instead of blood, it's poop everywhere.
Yeah, and I couldn't believe it, and I can still see her, like exhausted, laying on the floor, just so tired, and her head at the base of the toilet, and just everything covered, and that really, surprised me. I was not prepared, and in the psych unit, you have patients that might throw that stuff at you, and that's with intent. You see it coming, but this was very different.
Well, on that note, I think we should take a break because we need to catch our breath here.
Yeah,
when we come back, I want Adrienne to share some of things in her Alzheimer's dementia group because she has these small little community groups. So don't go away. We will be right back.
Reclaim your caregiver sanity by learning when to say yes and when to say no. It was specifically written for caregivers who know they should be putting their needs first, but just don't know how. Dave is the sole caregiver to his wife, Charlene, since 1996. He knows firsthand what caregivers are going through, because he is one. And he now speaks all across the country, offering caregivers his incredible caregiver support package. Even the airlines tell us that in the event of an emergency, to put your oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. They know that those who don't heed their advice often black out, thus becoming unable to help either themselves or their child. And caregivers are exactly the same way. It's my life too. Reclaim your caregiver sanity by learning when to say yes and when to say no. We'll help caregivers who are neglecting their sleep, diet, and social life, and learn to put their needs first. Pick up your copy today, or buy one for your special caregiver. On sale everywhere. And at caregiverscaregiver.com.
And we're back with Adrienne Gruberg and Lisa Santiago. Do you have an example, Lisa, of something most caregivers might face and a solution they might try? What's a common situation that you've come across? I don't know. Did I ask that correctly? Yeah.
Yeah. I think that it might be common that the person they're caring for, of course, you know, this is, has a lot to do with memory, and their memory seems like it's, you know, something's gone. They've lost a skill. They've lost the ability to do something. And it seems really shocking because it disappears in a second. It was there yesterday, and today, you know, now today you can't do it. And one of the best examples I have of that with my grandmother, at one morning, she could not read. One of the things that I had in place, and this is a kind of a stupid thing that I did, I bought a refrigerator that the whole door was a dry erase board. And I say I was stupid because I just bought a dry erase board and hung it up. I didn't have to buy a whole new refrigerator. So, duh.
What'd you do with the old one?
I recycled it, took it. So I had that refrigerator with the dry erase. The whole front was a dry erase board. It was lovely, but like I said, I was silly. But on this refrigerator, I would write every day the things that were going to happen for my grandmother so that she could kind of get in the habit if she forgot. You know, if I was going to work and I had another caregiver coming to feed her lunch, it would say, Paula will be here for lunch and play games with you. So she would know, okay, somebody's coming. Well, and in the morning when she would wake up, as we, you know, would, as she was walking to the bathroom, I would always say, you know, okay, why don't you read the refrigerator and tell me, you know, what's going on today? And every day, she could read it. Oh, this morning I'm having breakfast with you, and I'm going to have lunch with Paula, and then you're going to be home in time for dinner. And, you know, she could read these things. So one morning she just stood there and stared at it. And I said, okay, you know, I'm waiting. And she said, I can't read it. I don't know what it says. And I, you know, I thought she was fooling around. And I was like, come on, just read it. So, you know, we can move on with our day and you can have breakfast. And she said, I can't. I said, you can't sound out the letters. And I went and I pointed to the letters like you would, you know, for someone in kindergarten, or like, sound it out. Do you even know what the letters sound like? And she really was stumped. She actually, and it, you know, kind of surprised me. I thought, oh, no. And I realized, you know, most people would think, well, too bad today. We lost that ability. But I know that I know the power of the brain, and I knew that if I just could get more blood flowing to her brain, that he would be able to regain some of these skills. I didn't know at what level, but I knew it would help.
Right.
So, you know, you know, when I've told this story to other people, at first they think, you know, you're so mean, because it was raining outside. And I knew that I needed to get, you know, blood flowing to her brain very quickly, almost like with intense exercise. So I said, okay, you know, your brain needs blood. We are, you know, you can read. I know you can read, and you're gonna be able to do this. We're gonna get blood to your brain, and we're gonna go for a walk. And she looked outside and she said, but it's raining. She said, that's fine, we can do it. We won't go far, I promise. And I bundled her all up, got her head covered in her favorite babushka, and had an umbrella, and we had to go down about 5 stairs. And I had her walk about 10 feet to the driveway and turn around and come back and go back up the stairs. And when she got inside, I, you know, took her out of all those wet things and said, okay, what does it say? What's going to happen today? And she read it with ease.
Wow.
No, she didn't skip one word. It was perfect.
What a great tip.
It is a great tip.
Never
really getting
that.
The blood flow in the brain. It really was. It's so powerful. I wish I could have had it on a videotape. It sounds like magic. But
so did you ever mention that to the doctor? Is there a scientific reason for that?
Yeah, blood of the brain.
It was just putting together the pieces that I know, and I teach in psychology about, you know, how amazing the brain is and using that. Where I know, you know, had my aunts, you know, and the other caregivers encountered that moment, they just would have been frustrated and said, oh, you know, darn it, you know, now we lost another skill.
Yeah, doctors are always saying, oh, well, you know, once you lose it, it's irreversible. You can't get it back. And so I was just wondering what they had to say about that, you know. Like, yeah, all the blood, you know, like my wife's stroke, you know, it's been 22 years. Mm-hmm. All the blood to her brain isn't going to help, you know, the connections that aren't making connections anymore. So I was just wondering what those skeptical doctors would say about that, because that's unbelievable.
Yeah, it was really powerful. And I think now, you know, doctors do know that the brain, there's something that's called brain plasticity, which means essentially that your brain is constantly regenerating. I know a long time ago, they used to say that when something died, that was it in your brain, you were done. But I've used this idea, this, you know, this research, you know, many times with my grandmother, not just with this, with getting the blood flowing to the circuitry that already held the knowledge of being able to read. But I actually used this theory to help my grandmother relearn how to wipe herself when she went to the bathroom, because she actually really lost that skill. And when I, you know, told my family members, you know, oh, no, you know, grandma forgot how to wipe herself. She just, you know, she'll sit there and look around and, you know, kind of reach with her hand and you have to go, no, no. And I said, and they all said, you know, well, that's it. You know, you lost that. You're going to have to use the pens now. And, you know, too bad. And I said, no, no, no. She could live for another 5, 7, 10 years. And she doesn't need to live that way. I know she can relearn this. We're going to build new circuitry. Her brain can regenerate, like make new connections, new neural connections.
And well, how did you do it?
I, with every caregiver that helped her at any time, we had a system where she would never go to the restroom alone. And we would go in with her, and every single time that she was done, say, okay, you know, now it's time to wipe and stay dry. You grab that toilet paper, and, you know, you wad it up, and we would give her the directions the same way every time. And it took about 3.5 months before she was able to do it again on her own.
It's amazing you didn't give up, because that'd be easy to say, oh, she's not going to get this. How long would you have gone before you gave up?
I probably would have gone about 6 months, mainly because I know in a elderly system, physiologically, you know, cell reproduction is slower than it is when you're younger. And so I probably would have given it 6 to 8 months. To regenerate, you know, to rebuild.
So these stories are amazing. Are these in your book?
Yes, some of them are.
We did not give the name of the book.
Oh. yeah, that's a good tip. The name of my book is Alzheimer's: Quick Tips for the Caregiver Living with a Wild Raccoon.
Ah.
I have your flyer, but I don't think I have that name.
Yeah.
Is it published? It's all published?
No, I actually gave it to a number of my friends who were coworkers and colleagues, and they had some ideas, and I felt that it was really important for me to add another 3 sections before I had it published. So it's in its final editing stage. Yeah, it'll be available in about 10 to 12 weeks.
And the name again, you can do pre-purchases.
Alzheimer's.
Contact Amazon and tell them you want to start the pre-purchase. You know, give them a date, It's going to be available,
Oh,
and that's a
okay.
great way to promote it today, you know.
Oh, I didn't know I could do that. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I have a
Yeah.
question.
What is your question, Adrian?
With the relationship that you had with your grandmother and the expectations that you held out so much hope, did the time come when she ceased to recognize you and as she started to lose more and more things, how did you handle things once you couldn't come up with a solution, or didn't that happen?
I honestly cannot remember not coming up with a solution
Wow.
other than, at the very end when she really did lose her will to live and she was in bed, that I didn't have a solution for other than to watch her and do everything I could to make her comfortable. I wish I had a solution that I could have given her the will to live, regenerated that
Well,
desire,
yeah.
but I couldn't do that. And
Why did she lose her will to live?
I think she had enough moments of clarity that she realized that this was her life, and she really was so independent that not being able to drive anymore, not being able to just, get on a plane and go to Europe or, visit her friends or go play bingo whenever she wanted. I think those moments of clarity were almost, it was a double-edged sword. She
She was aware that her
had her
quality of life
own.
was suffering.
Exactly. And I think that she finally just, said, I'm done. And, and Adrienne, to answer your question about, were there times when she didn't know who I was? Yes, there were many, many, many times. And she usually would think I was someone else, one of her daughters instead of her granddaughter. And I just let her think that. If she thought I was, Marianne or Joanne, then I just agreed. Great. That's who, if as long as that's who you want to be here, I will be that person and tell you that I love you and, give you anything that you need. So yes, it did happen very often. And as long as it was somebody that she liked, nothing is
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of wisdom there. Listen, let's take another break. This hour is going so quickly. And so don't go away. We will be right back.
Anytime we suffer loss, we grieve. And a lot of people don't realize what even the grief process is. But it could be 5 to 7 steps ranging from denial, I don't believe this is happening, anger, oh my gosh, I'm so upset this is happening, to a form of bargaining, how can I get out of this, to depression, which is a very serious thing because that often leads to suicide. And then finally, finally, after you realize you have no more control over your situation and you're totally okay with the new normal that it brings, that wonderful, wonderful place called acceptance.
Being a caregiver takes a special person with passion and compassion. But even you can become a little burned out from time to time. The Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show was developed to help you overcome obstacles, adversity, and burnout, as well as just having a place to rest, relax, and recharge your batteries. We've all been there, and you're not alone. Now, you can take the Caregiver's Caregiver with you. Get the top 25 radio shows in convenient form. that plugs right into your USB car stereo or computer. Learn the techniques, tips, and encouragement we all need to better handle the day-to-day challenges. For around $1 per show, just $29.77, get the credit card-sized USB card to have with you anytime you need a caregiver's pick-me-up. Just go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com and order yours today. Go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com now. Consider it an investment in you, and ultimately, an investment in them.
And we're back with Adrian Gruberg and Lisa Santiago. And before the break, we were talking about some stuff, but I wanted to ask you, you know, sometimes caregivers are accusing their loved ones of being manipulative. Is that a valid criticism? I mean, are they really smart enough and shrewd enough to manipulate? Or what are your thoughts on that?
It was one of the things that drove some of my other family members a little insane. And they were constantly insisting that she's manipulative. I can't take it. She knows what she's doing, and she's just doing this to make me crazy. And I said, no, she's not. She is not doing it to make you crazy. If she's asking you 10 times, she really doesn't remember. Or she really wants to double check before she takes this piece of candy so that you don't get angry. She's asking because she doesn't want to hurt you or make you angry. So it's not manipulative. I thought on my grandmother's part, asking sometimes, you know, can I have this piece of candy or can I eat this piece of fruit, was just checking, you know. And again, partially this having this awareness and, you know, these moments of clarity, realizing this isn't my house, this isn't my kitchen, so I'm going to ask before I do these things. But it made some family members really nuts. Why does she keep asking me? I told her she should just take it. Okay. I don't really think it's manipulative.
I was caregiver to my mother-in-law and my mother. Neither had dementia or Alzheimer's. And without it, they were very manipulative.
Oh,
and they really knew how to work it. They knew how to work every frailty to get as much from me as they possibly could. And that was not fun. Despite all the psychology that I had at my fingertips, I mean, my sister-in-law came up with, you have to treat your mother like she's a patient in an asylum. You just have to say yes and just agree with everything. Don't take the bait and just say yes and do what has to be done. And that was a good tip, was just say yes and do what you got to do.
There were moments where I think from the outside looking in, people would say, yeah, your grandmother was manipulating you at that point. And one really clear example is, as I mentioned, I have three shepherds. And, of course, they loved grandma because grandma could sneak them food. And like I said, when she didn't feel like eating her food, all she would do is put it in her hand and somehow it got to a dog's mouth.
So, he was smart enough to figure that out.
Yeah.
He sure was. And so to try and curb that, I put signs on the kitchen table in really nice, beautiful frames that matched everything, all the decor. And it said, do not feed the dogs. And I couldn't just say don't feed the dogs because she would ignore that. But I put, you know, do not feed the dogs. It will make them sick. So I knew that she loved animals, and she would not want them to get sick. So we had that sign, I had that on the really nice and big, giant 20-point font, you know, in this frame on the table. And when she would we would be eating and she would say, oh, look, you know, they're hungry. And she would start to pick up a little piece of food. I would say, oh, but look at the sign, read the sign. And she would, you know, say, oh, do not feed the dogs. It'll make you sick. It'll make them sick. And then she would look at them and go, I'm sorry, I don't want you to get sick. So then she wouldn't feed them. But the manipulative piece, if somebody, you know, like I said, other on the outside looking in, somebody would say, oh, yeah, she was playing you. One day, the man I was dating at the time, who is now my husband, he was eating with us, and I had to go to the bathroom. So I got up, and I left, and he was sitting there with her, and she proceeded to take some food off her plate and feed the dogs. And my boyfriend, you know, knew this whole process. So he said, oh, Grandma, Grandma, you know, read the sign. And so she read it, you know, do not feed the dogs. It'll make them sick. And then, you know, he said, you know, Lisa isn't going to like that. And then she just got this sneaky smile, he said. And she said, what Lisa doesn't know won't hurt her. And then she said, so she really did have a very clear moment of, you know, sanity and clarity. She knew that it wasn't going to make them sick. She knew basically I was trying to play her, and she was not going to play. And so, you know, when he told me about it, I just smiled and thought, okay, she has these moments of clarity, and that's really great. And she took the power that she wanted in that moment to feel good and do what she thought was making the dogs happy, and it made her happy. And, you know, it's really, even if I would encourage people to not lean towards the side of believing it's manipulation, but try and remember all the things that have been taken away from this person, all of their independence, everything. And you know, we're telling them what to do and when to do it and how to do it. And if they take a little bit of these moments of clarity and it feels like manipulation to you, well, try and let that go. You know, we're not dictators. This isn't a power trip. We're doing this out of love. And if you can remember that, then just smile when that happens, because that is a really beautiful moment when they had enough clarity to do what they wanted and get it however they felt they, you know, they were able to. And that's how I choose to look at that moment, you know, what Lisa doesn't know won't hurt her. I just smile about it. I mean, I laugh about it now all the time. You know, okay, Grandma, you got me.
You know, parents are tempted to stick their kids in front of the TV set. And I know with Alzheimer's patients, you know, there's so many similarities that they're being, you know, you treat them like a 2-year-old or a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old. Any temptation to stick Grandma in front of the TV set and be her babysitter?
You know, I will confess that we had quite a number of hours in front of the television set. Especially if I was doing, you know, I teach some online classes as well. And if I was online with my laptop, then Grandma could be in her recliner chair and watch, you know, something that was entertaining. But what I learned, there was a time that I had another caregiver there. And when I came home, you know, I said, okay, like, this is what she likes to watch. And, you know, I left the DVDs. And when I walked in, there was a baseball game on. And my grandma was in her chair, and she was kind of looking around. And I thought, what's going on here? You know, why is there a baseball game on? That's not part of the plan, you know. And it kind of made me really think about the, you know, this using the television and you know, how a lot of people will just think, well, they don't know what's going on anyway. They can't pay attention. So what does it matter? We should put anything on. Well, that's a really detrimental way to view this television, because the television can actually help them use their brain. And if you put on things that can make them laugh, there's many, many studies that show how laughter and humor you know, improves your spirit. It increases your endorphins. It's one of the most powerful healing tools that there is that's natural. So, you know, more laughter. One of the things I learned was one of my grandma's favorite shows was Two and a Half Men. And, you know, and I really started to pay attention and tried to analyze, you know, why that was one of her favorites. And I also noticed that when we would watch it live on television, when there would be a commercial break, she would lose concept of everything that was going on. You know, commercials are like little mini stories. And so she would forget, you know, what was going on or what she was watching. And then she sometimes look at me and go, well, who's that person? I don't remember that person. And I would say, oh, that's a commercial. It's not part of the story. And so I learned that, number one, the best things for someone with Alzheimer's or dementia or a short attention span is to choose things that have little bits of information that can be gathered in a short, you know, short time. So Two and a Half Men has these quick moments of humor. You understand that, you know, there's something funny going on. You, even if you didn't watch the beginning to the end, you can watch a clip and laugh. And so things like that are really, really, really helpful. The other thing I learned was to, I started to just buy the DVD sets of those shows so I could put in a DVD and there were no commercials. So she could follow along in the longer storyline on days when her brain was able to do that. And that was helpful as well. And then I started buying DVD sets of things that were from her generation and things that she liked. And that was also really helpful. You know, Dick Van Dyke Show, Little Rascals, I Love Lucy, all of those were really, really great. And she could laugh. And if she could, if she had it in her, you know, on any given day, if her brain was capable of following the entire, you know, segment from the beginning to end, that's great. And if not, there were still these moments of humor and laughter that she could understand. So, you know, TV's not a caregiver, but I think if you're going to have your loved one in front of the television, that those are things to definitely keep in mind so that it's helpful and not hurtful.
Did music have a specific effect on her? Was she receptive to that?
Yes. Oh, music was so powerful. And this is in my book. I bought some Czech polka music because my grandmother spoke Czech fluently. She taught Czech school every summer for 24 years in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, which, you know, I think is the longest, I think it has the history of the longest running Czech school in the United States. And I don't speak Czech, not one word. I don't know anything. But I thought, you know, she loved polka music. She loved to dance. And so I bought about four or five different Czech polka CDs. And I would play them at breakfast. And I actually found one that was my favorite, but please don't ask me the title because I could never say it. But I played these at breakfast, and it was very magical. It would take my grandmother back to being a young girl when she lived with her grandmother during the summers. And she would talk about, you know, some mornings she would know that she was, you know, with me having breakfast. And she would tell me stories about growing up, you know, spending summers with her grandmother in Iowa and how, you know, they didn't have a lot of money and they would, you know, go to this area and, you know, pick flowers to put on the table, or they would go to some place and pick up metal so that they could sell it, you know, have it weighed and sell metal. And she had all these really wonderful stories. And it was so clear, these memories, you know, a lot of times the, you know, memories from childhood are crystal clear, but mm-hmm. she wouldn't think about that in any other time except when she heard that music. It brought, you know, that back. And the other, and then sometimes she would think that she was very young again. And mm-hmm. she would, you know, she'd eat and she'd listen to the music and she'd sing and she'd tap her toes and she was, you know, ready to get up and dance. And then she would look at me across the table and say, "Do you think you can take me to see my grandma today?"
I'm sure and she was young in her mind.
Yeah.
She was really young. The first time she asked me that, I was, you know, taken a little bit aback, and I said, "Do you know how old you are right now?"
Like, what did she say?
No. And she said, "No." And I said,
a lot of times they will answer. They'll say, "I'm 12 or something like that.
Yeah, I was waiting because I really wanted to know at what age she thought she was. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, I asked her, you know, "Do you know how old you are right now?" And she said, "No." And I said, "You're 88. And she went, "What?" "No way, I'm not that old." I said, "Yeah, I really think you are." She's like, "No, I can't be." And I said, "Well, yeah, I really think you are." And then she said, "Well, okay, but can you take me to see my grandma?"
Anyway.
Yeah. We've
got enough stories to talk another hour, but unfortunately we've run out of time. It goes so fast, doesn't it? When I tell a guest you're on for an hour, she says, "Oh my gosh, how am I going to talk for a whole hour?" But as you see, it goes very fast. So why don't you give some information, Lisa, how someone can get a hold of you or pre-order your book?
Oh, you know, thanks. I will contact Amazon and make sure people can pre-order the book. And the title is Alzheimer's: Quick Tips for the Caregiver Living with a Wild Raccoon. Because I know that all caregivers know that feeling that you come downstairs and it seems like a wild raccoon was in your house. I have an email address. If people are interested in emailing me for any reason, questions, I will certainly respond. It's alz.care.santiago@gmail.com. So alz.care.santiago@gmail.com. I would be happy to help.
Assuming everybody knows how to spell Santiago.
Ah, Santiago. Exactly like, what is it, capital of
Chile.
Chile? Chile. Capital of Chile. Exactly the same spelling, yes.
And just a reminder that the title of this is something about one time your mother thought that the poop was chocolate, and so that's why we call this what we did.
Oh, this segment.
Yes.
Yes, dog poop is not chocolate. Yes, that was the morning when the dogs actually were the ones who left presents in the bathroom.
In the bathroom.
And
we left out that little part.
Yeah, Grandma walked in and thought that she was left a great gift of chocolate on the floor.
Did she actually eat any?
Oh, she picked some up, and there was a piece laying on the bathroom counter that had a bite taken out of it.
Okay, that's enough of that.
That is not good.
TMI. Adrian, how do we get a hold of you?
Well, it's Adrian, Adrienne. At thecaregiverspace.org, and thecaregiverspace.org is the website, and all of our social media posts, you know, links are at the bottom of that page.
That's great, and thank you again for tuning in. Thank you for coming on, and we will see you again next week, everybody, and God bless you, and bye-bye. Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific Time and anytime afterwards on podcast to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process right here on the Worldwide Block Talk Radio Network. Goodbye.